More than 60 years ago, the artist Natasha Nicholson started bringing home curiosities, strange objects she found or bought just because they fascinated her. Things like skulls and old coins, broken dolls, seashells, strings of beads. And she started making arrangements of these things, mounting them in frames and then handmade boxes. And then she began building cabinets of curiosity. And all the time, these collections kept growing, to the point that they began spilling out onto the walls and the tables and the floors of her home and her studio. And today, she kind of lives inside her own curated cabinet of curiosity, which is now the subject of a one-woman exhibition at the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art.
Natasha, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent, excellent.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you very much. I was just saying, like, being here again reminds me I need to lead a more extraordinary life. I was looking you up online and I saw a couple pieces that I love, I remembered from here that I loved.
Oh yeah, here they are. Yeah,
Charles Monroe Kane lives in the same neighborhood as Natasha Nicholson. Her home and studios are in an old storefront, which just happens to be right next door to one of his favorite dive bars. So for years, Charles has been walking home at night and stopping to stare at the weird and wonderful objects in Natasha's windows, which it turns out is what a lot of the other bar patrons were doing, too.
At bar time at night, and in this room particularly, the conversations should have been taped. Somebody's had a few drinks. They come along and say, "What is this stuff?" Some say, "I think it's art." And they say, "I don't like art, but I really like this stuff. I wonder, what is this stuff?" And it goes on and on like that. So the conversations, when they don't know somebody's on the other side of these curtains.
Yeah.
And so they are free to speak in a way that they'd be intimidated if they walk into a museum. And that's one of the reasons I like being on the street, is that museums, by virtue of many issues, can be intimidating to some people. But when they're on the street and with their friends and feeling not on view, they will say things that they wouldn't say in a museum. And sometimes it's really interesting. I've met great friends from people knocking on the door because I like that ability to appeal to people without definition or prior preconceptions, but just to let them absorb what they're seeing and change their mind. You know, I don't like art, but I like this. I mean, that's a wonderful statement.
How do you discern when a find, there's so many objects and things in the world, how do you discern that that find is yours?
Pure instinct. The things talk to me. That's what people, a lot of people don't understand. Mm-hmm. In order to make this kind of work, or I think any work, you have to listen to what the objects are telling you. They give me as much information as I give them.
Is that a conversation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It happens all the time. And so that's what I do. I listen to what these things tell me. Perrault in this piece. These are early photographs, probably late 19th century. But they all relate to something we know somewhere in our minds. And I think the best art is about memory. And it's not just about my memory. It's about what the visitor, the viewer, what they conjure in their own mind about what these objects mean to them, which are totally different than mine, and that's the way it should be.
Oh, look at that. Look how cool that is.
Those are beautiful. Those are 19th century slates from a roof. And you couldn't do a painting that beautiful as each one of those. It would take years and decades, a lifetime, to learn how to paint like that. I mean, they resemble Rothko's.
Isn't that beautiful?
Now, the cabinets, and this is a cabinet of sorts. Maybe this is one of the first cabinets I ever did. I went to Europe for the first time when I was 32. And I built these three-room pieces, perhaps 40 inches long, and they're divided into three sections, and you're looking into individual rooms that then make up some kind of space. Now, that space could be many different things. And for me, it is a living space, but it's been altered. And with the found objects, these beautiful pins that were used in some kind of electronic process that probably cost thousands of dollars to make. They're salmon pink with a tiny little glass bead on the end. And chairs, which are a constant in my work. And then the last panel in this one is a secret, so you can only see through the end of it. The last room is entirely clad in galvanized metal with a bed and nothing else. So it becomes interpretive. You interpret it to be whatever you want with the story that's going on your head. It takes the artist a long time to understand what they're doing. So often people ask, well, what does this mean? I'll say, I don't know. I haven't lived with it long enough. And it's like, it's again, it's like maturing and growing. You say, wow, that's where I was at that time. I understand what this means. You can't always understand at the moment.
You say you rearrange this sometimes.
Things keep moving.
Are you arranging and rearranging this work?
All the time. And that's part of the power of what I do. It's all changing all the time. And this is rather what I call my Tinder cabinet. There are things that I love in here that are small. I love small things. And the arrangement, the contradiction, the empty photo albums, you know, what lives lived in those albums at one time. And this beautiful bronze silver eagle that's sort of a little fierce looking in comparison to the tenderness of these. It's that contrast that I like. The glass, the humor of the glass, this glass man, this figure with a clown's hat could be very trite without the elegance of these older pieces of glass that are gilded and beautiful and hand-blown and about another time. So there's the constant contrast. And one of the reasons for the colors and the pale greens, the reds, the yellows, the mauves, is that when cabinets started, people lived in darkness. So I did a lot of research, and cabinets were shockingly pink and bright yellow because you could see objects against them. If they were against wood, dark wood, which this cabinet was before I put this paper in it, you wouldn't be able to see anything. And in the times that cabinets came into being, you wouldn't have seen anything at all. And it was important to know, because these things that were marvels, when, you know, a seashell to some people was a miraculous thing.
Right, of course.
Things that we take for granted, the whole idea of wonder, of the glory of an object, and the excitement of an object that one hadn't seen before.
Cabinets caress your back. Young people are making them. Why? The age of the internet. I don't get it. Like, you think you could see anything you want, right?
I think it has to do with the physicality of it and your closeness to it. You're not just looking at a picture. A picture can give you information, but in a lot of cases, if it's not installed in the proper way, this makes something happen to your mind, your body, your heart, everything. Your flesh. I mean, there's things I get where I get goosebumps. And people who look at it get goosebumps. And I think that you need that physicality of it. The internet can tell us a lot, but it's not physical.
It also seems like there's a care in here for the negative space and for what you're doing.
I love manipulating space, and I understand space. So it's making that magic. And cabinets are magic. And I think people respond to the magic. But the magic has to appear effortless. For my work to be successful, you can't see how it's done. It just appears that way. And that's what magic is. You got to get rid of the strings.
You're 70 years old. You've been doing this for a long time. Mm-hmm. There must have been a moment where this was your choice. You're like, I'm going to do this. Take me back to that.
Very early. When I was a child and one of six children, where space was always at a premium, I always had my set spaces, and no one touched them. By my bedside, I had a small table, an implied box. It had parameters. And my treasures would go on there. And at an early age, those treasures could be rocks or a dried flower or a postcard from the art museum or something that had no value. But how it was arranged was incredibly important to me. I always had to have a certain order of some things. To this day, if I really love something, it either stays on my side of the bed or my bedside table for months sometimes before I can let it go out into another space.
Whenever I see a cabinet of curiosity, certainly yours, which are absolutely lovely, I think that one of the words that comes to mind, and I hate it because it's a negative word, but is obsession. Oh. It seems like the artist is obsessed. Are you obsessed?
Any good collector is obsessed. If you're not obsessed, you're not a great collector, because you're always looking for the next high. You're always looking for the next buy. You're always looking, how can I afford it? I'm buying it on time. Oh my God, I missed that piece. I made a terrible mistake. I should have, you know, sold 10 things in order to get that. Of course I'm obsessed.
That's Natasha Nicholson talking with Charles Monroe Kane. Her new solo show reproduces her entire studio space inside the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art. If you can't get here to see it, you can also read a new coffee table book called Natasha Nicholson, The Artist in Her Museum, or just visit our website and see a slideshow of her work. That's ttbook.org.